welcome to episode number 5 of Robot Radio. This is Greg Stanwood along with Andrew Martin. And we are now, as of this moment, I just finished listening to the Milwaukee game at High Corbett. So we're now through 4 spring training games.
It's been a good start so far. Not everything's going ideally, but, you know, I'm impressed with a lot of the stuff I've seen. And the most important part here is baseball is back.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've enjoyed just being able to follow the games at this point. I've only gotten a chance to follow 2 of them because the 2 that were played yesterday on Friday, I was at my internship and I only had game day up, so I couldn't really pay any close attention to what was going on. So I looked at the box score, but you might have to fill me in on what happened with some of them. I mean, I know the basics, but I know that at least the Anaheim game was televised by FSN West. So were you watching that feed, or?
I was watching most of the game, yeah. I mean, I was at work, too, so it's kind of one of those, you know, half-watching, glancing up at the score, listening to some exciting plays, and then looking at it then. You get the idea, being irresponsible.
So, yeah, it's been nice, though, that whether it be through a visiting feed or through KOA, we've had access so far, media access to every game. Last spring, that was not the case. Last spring, we had like 5 games in a row early on where we just had to watch game day.
Yeah, I remember those were the 4 strikes would just kind of suddenly show up, or 3 strikes, and we'd just suddenly show up, and you go, hey, wow, good work.
Yeah, everyone's swinging strike 3. Every strikeout is on 3 pitches.
Yeah,
we
look at
What's
that.
What's wrong with
perfect
you guys?
Location too. Oh, man, look at that grouping on those strikeouts. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, they're all in the same spot. It's precision.
Yeah, well.
Just an update for some of the players that have been forced to sit out due to injury so far. Houston Street had some – it was shoulder tightness, wasn't it?
Yes, it was just light shoulder inflammation from what I understood.
He has been – he's back to throwing, not off the mound yet, but he did long toss, and he seems to be on track, on a positive track right now.
Well, I was reading about Street when they first said, hey, shoulder inflammation – he was saying, yeah, this is just our typical, you know, spring shoulder whatever. And he was playing catch the entire time. He was never actually completely taken out of action.
There's no bad signs yet at the time of this recording, at the very least. But that's different from Betancourt, who does not seem to be getting any better. He obviously had a rough offseason, what with getting sick. And apparently, I mean, I applaud him for being conservative with himself because I think he realized that he was somewhat more fragile than he should have been. So he took the initiative and he said, you know, be careful with me. I don't want you throwing me out in games right away. And it seems like he first thought it could be just a week, but now it's looking like he might even be shut down completely for a while. So, I mean, if he's out for a couple weeks, that's definitely not a very positive thing. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's going to ruin his abilities during the season yet, but it's at the same time it certainly can't help.
I guess this season it's kind of like it's our time to start to, you know, see the little nagging things, the things that really kind of bother us, like, you know, with Houston Street shoulder, with Bert's, you know, sickness and general seeming inability to play baseball and stuff like that. It's like it's kind of caught up with us, all our good luck from last season. Hopefully it won't be a lasting thing. It is spring, too. I mean, we shouldn't jump to too many conclusions, but for a guy who's seemingly as key as Rafael Betancourt and someone who has such financial resources tied up in, definitely not the positive thing we'd like to hear.
On the better side of things, Brad Hopp looks like he's pretty close to being back. Are there any other thing? I mean, Fowler was held back for a while because he got sick, but he was back and he was in the game today. And if I recall, he did pretty well. He got at least one hit. He was actually 2 for 3.
Yeah, that's what I'm showing on the Rocky sortable playing stats. So good to hear that our guys are coming out strong. I'm just hoping they don't use up all their mojo before the season actually starts.
Well, first 4 games, I don't think we have to worry about that. So far, I don't have a lot of incredibly negative things to say. A lot of people were disappointed with Jeff Francis's initial outing, which, honestly, I mean, we all kind of expected that he was going to get knocked around a little bit. We can't be ready for him to, you know, just surge and straight out and show us that he's somehow been magically healed. I mean, there will be some recovery time there. But I actually took it as a positive sign that he was able to pitch at least one clean inning.
Well, let's remember, too, that Jeff Francis is the kind of pitcher who's going to rely on command of his changeup and stuff like that. Like, kind of, you know, rely on the solid movement to get batters to swing and miss or, you know, to hit it where they ain't. And that's the kind of thing that typically comes later in the spring. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw this out of Jeff Francis if he was 100% healthy, too.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I mean, we saw Greg Smith, who is really kind of a similar pitcher. I mean, he escaped his two innings without any runs, but he also walked three batters, I believe.
Yeah, he had a lot of trouble finding the strike zone.
And I mean, again, that's not necessarily. I mean, this is the point when you want to be fixing those problems. So seeing pitchers like Smith or Francis or whoever have some issues now, it's certainly better than later on. I mean, as obvious as that sounds, it's still important to highlight because I know how excited everybody is about just getting back into it. And we want to see everybody in top form, but it's still going to take some time before everybody is kind of settled into that direction.
And with all the positive news we've heard from everyone, too, I mean, it's about time that we kind of come back down to reality because, I mean, we're already counting our trophies before they're awarded.
Somebody said, whether it was Troy Rank or whether it was an interview with one of the players or with Tracy or somebody, mentioned that all of his non-fastball pitches seemed to be working fine. It was just his fastball was having issues, and he was, you know, 4 miles per hour slower than where they want him to be at the end of spring training.
Well, I think there's a distinct chance we're going to see him go to extended spring training.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before, and it would be possible to do. It's just that he'll have to be out, as we mentioned before, for a decent amount of time if they want him to stay back. You know, he has to be put on the 60-day disabled list. Actually, you know what? No, he doesn't. He could be put on the 15-day disabled list. It wouldn't give us a roster spot, but I don't know if we need one. So, no, I guess that's not as big of a deal as I've been saying it. It was. I honestly just thought through this myself. We could just put him on the 15-day DL and let it go from there. I'm just obsessed with putting players like that out on the 60-day because it frees up a roster space. That's all. And we're already going to have one of those with Buchholz anyway. And Greg Smith would be his most likely replacement, and he's already on the roster.
Yeah, I would wager it'll be Smith before we try to activate someone like Redding.
Yeah, probably. Hopefully. Smith is more similar to Francis, so I think he'd fit that hole probably a bit better.
He'd be perfect. You could place one soft tossing lefty with another soft tossing lefty.
Well, we'd also be replacing one soft tossing lefty who got hurt last year with another one.
That's a good point.
Although Smith's issues obviously weren't nearly as significant.
Gosh, Smith, it was like playing Operation last year. Water on the knee, it's Greg Smith. Broken heart, you see, it's Greg Smith.
From the very beginning, he got like the flu, didn't he, in spring training? And he was out for, he made one start while he was sick. And then he was like, no, I can't do this. And then he was out for like 2 weeks. And by then he was too weak to do anything with, so they sent him to minor league camp. Melvin Mora's seen a bit of playing time, but I'm looking for him. I'm following Mora closely because I want him to prove me wrong that he is that my statement originally was, you know, I don't believe that he's as versatile as the organization wants me to think he is. And they got him highlighting his versatility. You know, we got him because of his versatility. Well, I mean, I don't know if I would call a player who's only played one position for the last 5 years in the majors versatile. That's not to say now that he won't have the capability. I hope he does. But again, it's just not something that I would be sold on without any proof. And they put him in left field today. He didn't make a fool of himself. So, I mean, great.
I just think it's kind of stupid. I mean, I'm not trying to badmouth Melvin Mora for whatever reason. I'm just, I don't know. I mean, he's only played one position the past 5 years. We have 12,000 outfielders. Why are we going to even talk about him playing the outfield? I mean, I kind of get the idea of putting more right-handed bats in the lineup, but if we're really thinking that Melvin Mora in the outfield just for the sake of a right-handed bat is a good idea, I'm going to completely disagree there. I mean, I think you can understand why, too. It's poor logic, in my opinion. He's going to I'm not saying he's going to be terrible in the outfield, but there's a distinct chance he will be.
I'd much rather see his see the focus of their experiments with him be on the infield. I'd rather I want to see them put him at second, and I'm sure they will. I'm not saying they won't. I'm not saying they're going to play him at left field every day, but I think that's certainly more important to his role on the team, because it's going to be a lot more likely he winds up backing up Barmas or than he is going to be backing up basically every outfielder on our team in one of the outfield positions.
If I see Melvin Moore in center field, words that I probably shouldn't say out loud, but you see my point. I just don't like the idea of playing on the outfield at all when we have five starting. Well, I don't know if I can necessarily 100% confidently say Spielberg's a starting caliber still, but I mean, like, he'd start for the Pirates. That's a fact. So I guess, I mean, with five guys who are startable, why are we even thinking about taking plate appearances away from any one of them to put Mora in the outfield?
Well, hopefully, I mean, I guess the only devil's advocate argument I can come up with is if they need him to play the outfield, they want him to be able to do it.
I would call up Matt Miller from AAA before I regularly played Melvin Mora in the outfield. I really think this is a right-handed bat thing.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Well, I mean, Spielberg's is a right-handed bat. We don't need Mora to be in the outfield as a right-handed bat.
I completely agree with that. It just seems like we're trying to create problems for ourselves and then find the solutions for them. I'm just disturbed that this early in the spring, we're already saying, all right, why don't you, well, let's, you know, start filling with all our options. It really just seems like kind of like a waste of time. We have guys to, I mean, I know it's spring and you're going to experiment with stuff, but take those innings and if you're going to mess with our alternate positions, put Barmas at third and Mora at second just so you can see how they can both back up the positions. That seems like a much more realistic kind of thing. And I don't know. I know I'm kind of making a lot out of something that may not ever happen here, but it just I find it to be a disturbing just a disturbing sign that we're going to see a lot of silly stuff.
Going off on some of the stories about the pitchers so far, I mean, it's we've gotten most of them in for a little bit. I mean, obviously we talked about Street. He hasn't gotten in yet. And we still have yet to see Christian Friedrich, for example, or Greg Reynolds, both of whom I believe are scheduled to pitch in the next couple of games. Friedrich is tomorrow, I believe, although they said that the games might be weather-influenced, so hopefully nothing too particularly bad goes wrong there. Hamill and De La Rosa both had decent opening bits. Hamill allowed one run, but that's fine. And then Jimenez had some issues, but I mean, I don't know how. I mean, I can't fault the guy because he might as well have just been furious about how miserable it was to be stuck in traffic for 3 hours.
It was a weird day. I wouldn't think too hard about it. I mean, once again, first starts. I mean, if we just washed everything away to it's their first spring training start, we might as well not even talk about it. But
it's certainly not any kind of like foreshadowing of what to expect, as we've clarified several times. It's just something to observe. That's all.
Mm-hmm. I know. And with a guy who throws 100 miles an hour, though, you're going to have to wait a little bit for him to re-rein it in again. And it might even be, I mean, not to be too pessimistic about this, but we might be waiting until, you know, May to really see him kind of, you know, come back to form again. And when I say back to form, I don't mean effectiveness. I'm just saying when he's, oh my gosh, where did this kid come from? Good.
We've gotten to face a couple former Rockies, which stood out to me. We saw Rodrigo Lopez, who we owned, and then we saw Denny Bautista, who owned us.
I can't believe that Denny Bautista would own anyone. That just seems wrong on all counts for me.
He had some wicked stuff.
Is that what the scouts all saw? Because we sure gave him a lot of time to be terrible.
Did we? We only had him for a year.
It was only a year. We got him in 06 in the AFL trade.
Right, and then he was there through 07. And then
I thought he was there in 08 as well.
Nope. He left at the end of 07 and he went
to... Well, no, we traded him for Jose Capellan.
That's right, we did
trade
him.
For about a week.
Well, he didn't just stick with us for 1 week. He was there for one game. We called him up and then we designated him for assignment after the game.
Yeah.
And then obviously he chose the free agency route, so...
Well, I guess we didn't really lose much on that trade anyways. I mean, Ryan Sheely and Scott Doman, oh no, world beaters, we're going to lose now.
And we got a good season out of Affeldt.
Yes, we did. I wish we kept Affeldt along as an inning pitcher, but What I mean, he had a good year with San Francisco, and I was kind of disappointed that. Well, I mean, I wanted to do well or whatever, but you know what I mean.
How did he do in his year in Cincinnati between Colorado and San Francisco?
Okay, well, I'm looking at Affelt's numbers at Cincinnati, and he was good. He posted a 3.33 ERA in 74 games, 78 innings pitched, struck out over a batter an inning, so 9.19 there, walked less than one every three, so that's a 2.87 walks per nine. And it's just kind of a shame. I mean, you look at Fogg, and we mentioned Josh Fogg and how he went to Cincinnati and ended up just being terrible and then came here and kind of had, you know, one last, woo, go Josh Fogg, and that was like the end of his career, you know? It makes me feel bad about Fogg, and I mean, Fogg and Torrey Alba kind of in the same boat here, and without getting into, oh my gosh, catchers, whatever, you got a situation where you have teams that are like, hey, we'd like to bring you back, and their agents are like, no, we'll get you money somewhere else, or... You know, don't worry. If they don't meet your offers, you know, they're your demands, and we're going to get that contract somewhere else.
If they don't pay you as quickly as you want them to, reject the offer.
and then Fogg went and, you know, got this, you know, piddly little one-year offer with Cincinnati, and then Torrey Alba gets kind of a one-year, oh, hey, look, you can still catch, good for you, offer with San Diego. And I don't know. I mean, for guys that seemingly like the organization or liked by the fans and stuff like that, it seems they're getting some awful advice from these people that they're paying to get them the best situation.
There have been a lot of agent changes by big players over the season. Like, Felipe Lopez was really mad about his situation.
I think Scott Boras is losing a lot of ground with his clients.
That may be. He's still fighting and winning for a lot of them. I mean, the deal he got Matt Holliday is ridiculous.
Which is true, but it makes it seem... I mean, if you look at Johnny Damon... How he kind of screwed that up. I mean, I think Damon wanted to stay with the Yankees, and instead he had to settle for the 1 year with the Tigers to kind of try to reestablish value, which, you know, could be worse, I suppose, but it seems like Boras only cares about his big-name clients. And then, oh, right, you're one of my clients as well. I should probably look into that, shouldn't I? Oh, look, the market's gone for you. That's too bad.
Again, it could be that he neglects them, but it also seems like he fights too hard for his lesser players. I could have sworn I saw something somewhere where he said he wanted Damon to get like a 4-year deal or something like that.
Which is just stupid.
It is. It's completely stupid. Well, nobody would sign him for 4 years.
Or a two I could see, but four? I mean, he's at the wrong part in his career trying to be reestablishing value, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, that's just the impression that I got from him. And I feel like he has this attitude that, you know, suggests to his clients that they should be completely – they should not be willing to give in for anything. And of course, knowing Boras, he probably thinks he makes the decisions himself. He's like, no, I order you not to take that contract. I forbid it. and so his players who are inadvertently turning down their best deal because Boras has, or as we were talking about, really any agent is advising them that it will improve, they're just screwing themselves over.
So part of it isn't to say my knee jerk is, you know, why are guys like Gonzalez then signing with Boras? I think the fact is that, you know, Gonzalez sees himself as being a potential superstar here and that he's going to make, you know, 80-plus in the free agent market in 4 years here or something like that. And maybe that's why he's sticking with him. I mean, at the very least, he's going to get him endorsement money. That's why Spielberg is with him, in my opinion.
I hadn't really thought about that, but that makes sense. And then Fowler's with him too, isn't he?
That makes me sad.
Yeah, our whole outfield, well, three of our outfielders.
Yeah, this just in, Seth Smith.
I was going to say the same thing, yeah.
Somebody pressed the no button.
Speaking of Smith, he's gotten off to a good start.
I would think so. I've been impressed with him and his unicorns.
Just for a quick review of today's game, our two... Basically, everybody who pitched today was either a sixth starter or a young minor league reliever. And Redding and Chacin... didn't do so great. I mean, Redding wasn't that bad, I guess. He wasn't good.
About what you'd expect.
Yeah. Which, again, it's fine. I'm not saying...
I mean, Chacin's line score looks pretty awful. But that first inning where just everything kept going wrong and it kept squirting through holes and LaDuca let what, you know, Bucknerd won and stuff like that. He was getting ground balls on everything. Isn't that exactly what we want him to do, is get ground balls?
Yeah. Again, since it was not televised, we couldn't really see how his form was, but it seemed to me like some degree of it was just bad luck.
Well, that's one thing that Corrigan said on the air, was that he said that he got all the ground balls, and that some of them were kind of, you know, hit pretty hard, but still, they're ground balls, you know?
You know what's interesting? I didn't realize this. I knew that there weren't a lot of strikeouts in the game. Total between the two teams today at the Milwaukee at Colorado game, one strikeout.
One. That's all we got? Strikeout?
No, we didn't get any. No Rockies pitcher struck out a single batter. I mean, between the entire game, there was one strikeout. It was Ryan Spielborg's in like the seventh inning. It was the only strikeout. Look at the box score. It's true.
I believe you. I was listening to part of the game on the radio. I was running errands today. That's disappointing, to say the least.
Well, at the very least, for the final four innings, Edmer Escalona, Shane Lindsay, Craig Baker, and Andrew Johnston all had pretty decent performances. I mean, Andrew Johnston got his save on five pitches. And Shane Lindsay was the first pitcher on Colorado to get a 1-2-3 inning under his belt.
I'm kind of surprised he didn't strike anyone out, because isn't that like his, you know, deal?
Shane Lindsay?
Yeah.
Is he a strikeout pitcher?
That's my understanding, that he went down to the A-ball levels. He was striking out nearly 10 per, you know, 9.
Herman Irabaran grounds out. Shortstop Hector Gomez to first baseman Mike Polk. Lee Hadel grounds out. First baseman Mike Polk to pitcher Shane Lindsay. Stephen Wilson grounds out. Pitcher Shane Lindsay to first baseman Mike Polk.
So well, I guess if we're going to get outs, we might as well keep him on the ground. Good to hear Nelson taking, you know, innings and ground balls without, you know, dying.
Yeah, or breaking his arm at the very least. Chris Nelson tripped over the base.
Out for 6 months. Bad case of base toe. It's much worse than turf toe. Base toe.
Chris Nelson trips over the base, and then he's in the middle of throwing, and he throws it over the first baseman into the dugout, and it hits Greg Reynolds in the face.
Not cool. You're going to get banned for that, you realize.
Oh, and Cole Garner. We forgot about Cole Garner.
Cole Garner.
The interesting thing about Garner is he's the only player on our perps list of prospects that was Rule 5 eligible that was not protected. And so he's not protected by the 40-man, but he was not claimed. Obviously, the Rockies didn't have anybody claimed or do any claiming in the Rule 5 draft, so he's still here. And he's gotten off to a pretty good start.
I'll say, I guess you didn't get to watch. You didn't get to watch a game.
I didn't. I mean, I saw the box score. I saw he had a home run, but I didn't see.
Very exciting. I was cheering. I mean, I didn't cheer that loudly because I was in my office.
I could see Garner. I mean, he started, or he didn't start. No, he came in the middle of the game. Where is he? Oh, no, he did start.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he started in right and moved to left. So he played the entire thing, and then he got another chance today. He's getting attention. I mean, I could see him as being somebody who's not reassigned to minor league camp right away, someone they might want to keep around with everybody to see if he can develop and really get the best out of his time with the major league team. And today he was 1-for-1. I don't remember what he did. He might have been. I can't remember if he was part of the rally that won the game or not. Yeah, Cole Garner he didn't hit an RBI, but he hit a single. Jordan Pacheco walked. Cole Garner single. Jordan Pacheco to third. Hector Gomez triples. Pacheco and Garner score.
I'm glad to see Pacheco getting playing time, because I mean I think he's not going to be anything really to look at for another year or two here, but I'm glad to see that he's, you know, making good use of the time he's getting with the coaches watching.
I forgot to mention, since you weren't paying attention, you probably didn't notice, but we had Chris Nelson and Hector Gomez do a suicide squeeze, which was cool.
Oof, get out!
No.
See what you get for running errands?
Yeah. It's clearly proof that you were the problem.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously.
Yeah, we had Hector Gomez on third, and Chris Nelson squeezed him, so.
That's disgustingly awesome.
Agreed. And we faced Brian Fuentes. Forgot about that.
That was odd. He walked Tulowitzki. That made me happy. That was a good battle. Screw Brian Fuentes.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and go through the schedule for the next week real quick.
Go for it.
We're recording on Saturday, so the two games at Arizona tomorrow, well, one at Arizona, one Arizona at us, will be done. So starting on Monday the 8th, we're at San Diego. That game is going to be on the radio. It's going to be on a Padres station. You can get it through MLB Game Day Audio. At LA Dodgers, that's going to be on MLB Network. The 10th, Wednesday, Kansas City. Thursday, the 11th, Texas. Friday, the 12th, San Francisco. Saturday, the 13th, at Milwaukee. And then Sunday, the 14th, is a split. It's our last split squad bit of the spring. We have half our team at home. It's playing Seattle, and then we're also at Arizona, and that game is it's in Mexico. And then that puts us through next Monday, which is when we'll have the next episode up. So, again, MLB this season is doing their media guide in increments. They kind of upload it like 3 days in advance, so I don't know, other than Monday and Tuesday's games, if they're going to be covered. I hope they are. So far, we've had good luck with that. Well, I think that about wraps it up. And on behalf of myself and Andrew, we will see you next week.